heard through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we are getting you guys ready for the NFL draft by giving you some prospect profiles. These are headed up by Jake Heaps, who's been looking at guys that could be a selection for the Seahawks with pick number 56. We are not looking at the top guys in the draft. The Seahawks aren't going to get a chance at those guys. We aren't looking at guys that are going to be in the seventh round. Jake is taking a look at guys that are going to be potentially day two picks and maybe even slip a little further or potentially go a little bit higher in the second round. But ideally, guys that the Seahawks could feasibly get. That is the point of all of these draft prospect profiles. And they continue today with Georgia cornerback Tyson Campbell.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
Now, if you want to feel exceptionally old, your next Seahawks cornerback might be born in March of 2000, because that's when Tyson Campbell was born. I've been waiting for the roster to have those 00, 01, 02, Jake, because I knew that that's when I would turn into dust and float away in the wind. I knew that's when it would happen. Tyson Campbell, born in March 2000, he went to high school in Florida with another top pick in this year's draft, Patrick Surtain. Surtain went on to play at Alabama, and his teammate, Tyson Campbell, who was also a five-star recruit, went on to commit to Georgia. Jake, what kind of player did he become at Georgia, and what kind of player could he be for the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, Tyson Campbell, as you mentioned, five-star recruit out of Florida. He was also, I think, when you talk about a secondary and being coached, he came out of one of the best high schools that you could have possibly come out of, and that led him to have instant contribution as a freshman. He came on strong his true freshman year in 2018, Stacy, starting 11 games, 45 tackles, one pass breakup, and then he continued to keep improving, except for in 2019, when he was only able to play in 9 contests due to a turf toe injury. Oof. He had 4 pass breakups despite missing 5 games. And so he really kind of hit a hard road there in 2019. But in 2020, he came back strong with Georgia. He led the team with 5 pass breakups, 29 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, and 1 interception. Now, Campbell, to me, Tyson Campbell is the smoothest cornerback prospect in this draft. At 6'1", 193 pounds, he ran a 4.37 40 and had a 34.5-inch vertical. So when you talk about the height, the measurables, he fits into the profile that the Seahawks truly love to have, Stacy. And when you talk about the smoothness, what I mean is his ability to transition, his ability to cover deep from his back pedal to then having to turn and run into his sprint, from his back pedal to sticking his foot in the ground and reacting and driving in, to a route that is breaking in front of him in order to break up the pass. And I think that he is one of the smoothest corners that you will see in this draft. Now, there is another corner at Georgia, Eric Stokes, that I think a lot of people will be comparing each other to, and I think Stokes is getting a lot of hype right now, and I could easily see Tyson Campbell fall in this draft to the Seattle Seahawks potentially. And if that was the case, I think to me, you're getting a home run with Tyson Campbell playing big time football in the SEC, has elite level traits in terms of his size, speed, and hands, and is a big time playmaker in terms of, you know, coming up with big timely stops and key plays. And so I think that when you look at Tyson Campbell, I think that there is a lot to like about this young man. And we talk about the competition, what is currently there right now with the Seattle Seahawks. They have veteran players that are unproven, guys that are still trying to make their mark in this league. Trey Flowers, we know that he has had an up and down career here in Seattle and will be trying to make a name for himself and get a spot. Demarius Randall, who they signed back, transitioned to safety, Stacy, at one point in time. It was a safety for the Seahawks, but initially was drafted high to be a corner. The Seahawks are planning on using Randall at the cornerback position to solidify depth, but you don't love seeing a guy go from corner to safety back to corner, because was he ever good enough to begin with in the NFL at that cornerback position? That's the big question. Akilah Witherspoon, good system fit there from the 49ers to the Seahawks. You don't know what you're going to get. And Pierre Desir, there's background and history there with him. Tyson Campbell, I think, immediately would play well into this competition, and you would be building towards the future, knowing that you have guys that you feel comfortable playing in games and that Tyson Campbell could learn from. But ultimately, I think he has more elite physical traits than anybody that I just listed on this current roster at the cornerback spot for the Seahawks.
Now, I know that you mentioned Pierre Desir. I'm going to go ahead and turn to the text line from the 425. They did say, hey, Jake, Seattle just signed Pierre Desir for depth. Does that change anything you're talking about as far as whether or not you would use, potentially? We're talking about if the Seahawks stay at 56, which I don't know that any of us are necessarily expecting them to do, because they've never had this few picks under John Schneider. If they stay at 56, does bringing in Pierre Desir change whether or not you're willing to take a cornerback right there if
not at all.
Campbell's available?
Not at all, Stacey. I don't even hesitate with that, because this is about upgrades. This isn't about depth. This isn't about bringing in guys that are trying to make their way, that are aging in this league. And that's what Pierre Desir is. He's not 30 years old necessarily and you know, on his way out the door, but he is tried, proven, and tested in terms of a guy that has had success in this league, but has ultimately tapered off from his great production years in 2017 and 18. When he was with the Indianapolis Colts, also in 2019. But what I do think you have is a guy in Tyson Campbell who can run sideline to sideline, who's a very instinctual player, who is a willing tackler. I just think when you have players like Tyson Campbell that fall down to you at 56 potentially, the talent and the upside outweighs anything that a Pierre Desir could bring to the table for you with your current circumstances. This is about getting younger. This is about getting healthier. This is about getting more talented. And this is also about building towards the future. And at this cornerback spot, as we had highlighted earlier in the show, you have to be able to start building towards the future. And at your cornerback spot after this year, you only have Ugo Amadi on this roster. DJ Reed is on a one-year contract. Akilah Witherspoon, everybody that I just mentioned is on the final year or on a one-year deal this year. You have to start building towards the future, and Tyson Campbell could be a nice solidifying piece at that cornerback spot for you, not just this year, but of the future.
Now, to help Seahawks fans listening understand the kind of player Tyson is there any, ideally a former Seahawk, but any NFL corner, former corner or current, that kind of reminds you of Tyson, or that rather Tyson reminds you of when he plays?
No,
it's okay
I don't
to say
have,
nothing I,
don't,
I can think
I don't,
of.
I don't really have a great comp, yeah. And I don't like giving comps of players, to be honest with you. And the reason why is because I think it's trying to say that this player is going to project into a guy who's in the league right now, mm-hmm. unless there is just unique size and physical traits that match. I think every player is their own, and I think that every player is going to find their niche in this league. And I think with Tyson Campbell, his ability to be extremely savvy and his ability to get in and out of breaks very smoothly and quickly and explosively, I think is what's going to help him tremendously in this league. And I think that anytime you're a rookie, you're going to have moments where you get beat. Can you recover? Can you get back to the ball and play in phase? And I think that that's what Tyson Campbell can do, and that's what he has shown his ability to do extremely well. And a guy who is very confident in his abilities and is not afraid to play man-to-man coverage, which the Seahawks will put him in man-to-man coverage quite often once they decide to go out of their cover three scheme throughout the course of a game.
Now let's have a moment of honesty, a moment of just some tough truth right now. What are the odds that Tyson actually falls to the Seahawks at 56 overall?
The it's hard because the cornerback spot, Stacey, I think is one that is widely up to interpretation. I've seen Tyson Campbell projected anywhere from late first, early second, all the way until the third round of the draft. So I really think it's pick your flavor, and this is why this is such a unique draft class. at the cornerback position this year more than any other year is I think that you have tremendous depth in this draft at the cornerback spot with a bunch of unique guys that have the size profile, that has the that have the length arm-wise, and have the speed that the Seahawks really like. And Tyson Campbell is one of those guys that fits into that profile. And, you know, before we get into the draft heading next week, Stacey, we're going to have to get into a couple of these profiles where we're going to list off not just one player, but multiple players. And you're going to see at the cornerback spot, we have already talked about Ifeatu Melifonwu, and we talked about Tyson Campbell, but there are a whole other list of corners that I think the Seahawks will have an opportunity to evaluate and look at. And so Tyson Campbell, as I said before, his range is wide. If I had to guess, I think that he is most likely a second-round talent. With what I've seen on film, I really like this guy, and I think that he could fit in very, very nicely here in Seattle.
That is Jake's Seahawks draft prospect profile, this one on Georgia cornerback Tyson Campbell. If you miss any of today's profile or any of the previous profiles Jake has done, normally they kick off hour three of the show. We're going to have Brock Huard on today, so this one a little bit earlier, but you can check those out usually in hour three of the Jake and Stacey show wherever you download your podcast or on 710sports.com. go ahead and hit that podcast page and click on Jake and Stacey hour three for Seahawks draft prospect profiles from Jake Heaps, today's on cornerback Tyson Campbell. Now, before I jump into four down territory, a quick question that stemmed from a conversation that Danny O'Neill had. So when you were still on vacation, Jake, I spent one day hosting the morning with Danny, and Danny and I were talking about some of the biggest draft needs, and he had this fascinating take that he's talked about before, but I just thought it was a really interesting one because it pertains especially to cornerbacks. And he thinks that the Seahawks have perhaps not revolutionized, but certainly drawn attention to a type of corner that they love that has now made it more difficult for them to find that corner because they've added more value to the cornerbacks that fit their profile. Meaning, they've loved cornerbacks that were in the past, say prior to Richard Sherman, undervalued, and now they're the ones that are first off the board.
Well, because it was not the prototype.
Right.
I mean, for a long time in the NFL, the prototype for a corner was around 6 foot, at most 6'1", and below. So you had a lot of corners in the league that were playing at 5'10", 5'11", 5'9", even smaller, faster, twitchier guys. And then the Seahawks come along and they go and get Richard Sherman at 6'2", 6'3". They get Brandon Browner at 6'4", you know, 220 pounds. I mean, they got these absolute creatures out on the edge with their arms. Their fingertips are going past their knees. I mean, just guys that you would never really think of putting out there on the edge. And when they were able to show the length and the positivity of that length in their zone cover schemes, it definitely changed the league, and it changed the way that they looked at the position and valued the position. And that's why I think it's really, really fascinating, Stacey, that you have a draft littered with guys this year that are 6 foot all to 6'2", to 6'3", all across the board. The size has completely changed at this cornerback spot, and that's because you're seeing a change of profiled receiver-type bodies now going out and saying, hey, I can play corner.
Now, I don't think that's happened as suddenly with quarterback, but I do think that guys like Russell Wilson, there aren't really guys like Russell Wilson, but that there are a number of quarterbacks who it's happened more so less with height with quarterbacks and more with mobility, that scene is something where it's like, it's a must to be a quarterback. You have to be able to create plays on the fly. And it used to be something that felt like, and it was unfairly critiqued this way, backyard football. Like, I've never really loved that term, but that's how it used to be framed. And now those guys are seen as premier picks. And guys that can't do that, it's a weakness. I mean, it's a fascinating development. Looking at that in that same context with corner it certainly makes it interesting how the Seahawks have revolutionized the league there. All right.
Well, look just real quick.
Yeah.
Look at the difference between Mac Jones and a guy like Kyle Trask. Normally, those two guys mm-hmm. would be, you know, towards the top of most NFL teams' boards, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And you know, people are saying Mac Jones is a top 10 quarterback. Are you serious? Given all the unique physical gifts that a lot of these other quarterbacks are bringing to the table.
I love Trey Lance, and I hope he goes to the 49ers because I do think he gives them a better edge than Mac Jones, though he's more of an unclear prospect. You're not quite sure what you're getting. It's selfish so that I can watch him more and more of those matchups. How mad will you be if they go with Mac Jones at number three?
I'd just be very surprised. I'll be very surprised because the ceiling is not as high with a guy like Mac Jones as it is with the other quarterbacks. However, if you really feel like Mac Jones can be a Tom Brady, Drew Brees, a Phillip Rivers, a guy who can really process the game, process the information that they're seeing, go and execute the offense at an extremely high level, like Matt Ryan did with Kyle Shanahan, a few years back, I think that if you truly feel that way, then getting a player like Mac Jones might be the best thing for your system. So it really all depends on where they truly feel like his evaluation or his ceiling can really be, and can he be one of those traditional great pocket passers?
All right, it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake, what do you make of the battle going on right now between the NFL and NFLPA when it comes to voluntary OTAs?
Well, as of right now, I think it's a fascinating situation just because you look at the NFLPA and their standpoint of, look, we don't want to take any unnecessary risks right now. We went through and we sacrificed during the season, and if you can't guarantee that your facilities are going to bring an unbelievable amount of, close to 100% nearly guarantee that we're not going to have any issues within the building while we're there, then we're not going to take the risk, and we're not going to make our families go through the quarantining that they had to do last year during the season, the incredible sacrifices that they made, not seeing family members, not seeing grandparents, not going and doing these things that they were told to do by NFL teams to keep their positive tests down. I think that that's one battle. The NFL is looking on the other hand and saying, hey, we're going to, you know, roll out the vaccines. We're going to do everything we can to ensure your safety. And I think at this point, what they've found themselves in is a unique year like last year. Like so many other businesses found out that, hey, you can work from remote. You can make this positive. If you're a player, if you remember Greg Olsen last year saying, look, this is the best I have felt in years because I was able to work out the way that I wanted to. Physically, I feel more fit and ready to go heading into training camp than I had in the past several years. I think you're seeing a lot of players feeling that way and therefore not wanting to necessarily come back to regular, normal OTA like schedules, and I'll be curious to see if this changes anything down the road permanently.
Wish that had translated to the field with Greg Olsen. Second down.
You had to do it. All right, Curtis.
Low-hanging fruit, Stacey. Considering that the Seahawks are 23rd in defensive spending, what's your comfort level with the defense now that free agency is quieted down?
I'll say this. If you were to tell me at the beginning of January, so at the close of the regular season, hey, in April, a week ahead of the draft, the Seahawks won't have Jaron Reed, they won't have Shaquille Griffin, how are you going to be feeling? I'd be like, ooh, not great. But I feel surprisingly fine about it. Now, this is all pending and with the assumption that they're going to add to the defense with the draft, either a corner or a DN, maybe both, who knows. So obviously, I'm still expecting there to be either a corner brought in to compete for a starting job or a defensive end brought in for depth. The big deciding factor for me was bringing back Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa. Those two guys combined for 11 sacks for your team last year, and I was really concerned when both were hitting free agency. Well, one was released and one hit free agency, and we didn't hear anything about them for a while. I was thinking, where are you going to get these sacks? Because Daryl Taylor hasn't taken a snap. Alton Robinson is going to be in his second year and hasn't played a ton. Where's this going to come from? LJ Collier? Rasheem Green? Where's it coming from? Getting those two back helped a lot. I feel pretty okay about it.
Third down. Jake, what has changed drastically in the NFL's evaluation of quarterbacks coming out of college in the past 10 years?
What systems they play in? Where are they coming from? More and more, you are seeing that it really doesn't matter. If you can play, you can be evaluated and drafted in the NFL. For a long time, and especially when I was being recruited coming out of high school, the conversation was, hey, you want to play for a pro-style head coach, a guy who has an offense that is designed similarly to the NFL. You want to go and play for, you know, head coaches that have had NFL background and experience. Therefore, it's an easier transition. And although I think those things are very positive still to this day, and it was very positive for me, it made the NFL game not as difficult in terms of absorbing information and processing it, I do believe that it's overstated how important that is now. And you're seeing Patrick Mahomes come from Texas A&M in that air raid system and light up the league. You're seeing guys come from all sorts of different spread systems and being evaluated and not being knocked for being in those types of systems. So the NFL has come a long way in changing their evaluation and knocking and grading down players for playing in spread systems. And so, therefore, I think it eliminates a lot of the need or desire for high school quarterbacks to want and go and play for those types of systems. Go put up points, go put up yards, and you'll get a chance to get drafted. I won't call the player out, but I was in a room with quarterback room with the guy in the NFL who put up major, major yards, major, major stats in college football. Didn't know a lick about NFL defenses, nothing.
Tell us who it is, Jake.
Yet he was drafted pretty high in this draft, in the NFL draft, and was given an opportunity based off of the production, not necessarily the knowledge. It didn't end up panning out, didn't work, but they still got that opportunity, and I think that that is a big difference in the evaluation of NFL quarterbacks nowadays.
I look forward to asking you who this is during the break.
Does his name rhyme with Phenomyth?
Nope.
No,
that's a good guess. That's a very good guess.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming it's the same draft class.
Oh?
Maybe. We'll look into this. We'll do our research.
Fourth down.
If you get it right, I'll tell you.
Okay, I can do that. I'm looking at it right now while you answer this question.
Fourth down, Jake. If the Seahawks were to move on from Alden Smith, what could be the corresponding move they make?
Well, I don't think that if you lose out on Alden Smith, that the Seahawks just say, we gave it a shot. We tried to go for the home run hit. We tried to go for the splash move to make our pass rush that much better. I think that they still look at that position and say, hey, if we can add one more piece, we can get better. And we can make this group not just good, but dominant. And I still think that there's a couple of unique candidates out there if they had to move on from Alden Smith. Guys like a guy like Melvin Ingram, Justin Houston, Ryan Kerrigan. Those three names really stand out to me as free agent targets that are still out there that I think would sign for significantly less than what they're accustomed to signing for, that I think can bring legitimately good contributions. I mean, Ryan Kerrigan took a step back last year like Carlos Dunlap did and still posted 5.5 sacks. If he was able to come in and post those numbers or even better, I think that it would be a tremendous addition to this group. Justin Houston is still posting 7, 8, 9 sacks a year at his age in the league, so still very, very productive player. And the wild card is Melvin Ingram, a guy who has a crazy, crazy upside, yet his injury last year is something that is worrisome. But you could see either one of those players be a very, very good replacement for Aldon Smith that the Seahawks had to move on?
I'm sure your answer was great. Curtis and I have been discussing over the mics who this quarterback might be that you're not talking trash about, just giving us a little shady intel, and we think we have the answer.
Okay.
Can we say it on air?
Sure. Yeah, you can go for it.
Is it Bryce Petty?
Yes.
Yeah!
Bryce Petty. Yep.
Oh, man. I'll never forget it.
He turned to me in the meeting room and said, "Jake, I have no idea what they're talking
Ooh.
About." And
it was Jake, just basic, he opened up to you.
Basic defensive fronts and everything, and it showed on the field. But, you know, great guy. Loved being in the room with him. Loved working with him and all that. But just a great example of a guy who gets drafted in the fourth round. It was 100% based off of his size and his production in college football, not necessarily the system or how well he was groomed into playing in the NFL. And I think guys like Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and others have shown that coming from like systems of Bryce Petty, that they can overcome that and they can be very successful players no matter what system you come from.
All right. A new NFL head coach has a weird test for some draft prospects. Plus, a Timberwolves player has some dating advice for new owner A-Rod. That's coming up next in the timeline. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. And taking a look around the NFL for this one, Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni says that he challenged some draft picks to a game of rock, paper, scissors to test their competitiveness. Now, two things I have to say about this one. One, I feel like I had heard in previous interviews from the Combine, obviously this was pre-pandemic, that players had been asked to play rock, paper, scissors before. I wonder if that's been Nick Sirianni's thing when he was with another coaching staff, or if this is something that a couple different teams will do. Secondly, does this actually show any kind of real competitiveness? Or is it just like a weird excuse to play rock, paper, scissors? Because I don't know that I am going to judge someone's competitiveness just based on playing this game.
Well, I mean, if you've ever played a real elite competitor, Stacey, then you would understand that rock, paper, scissors is serious business. Okay, there's not a game that you don't walk into that you don't take as seriously as possible. I think the type of person that NFL teams are looking for is that one guy or girl that takes things just too far when, you know, you're just trying to have a fun, casual game night and you have that one friend that is ruining it for everybody because they're taking the game too seriously.
Why do I feel like Jake is talking about himself?
It's that personality.
He's definitely talking about himself.
I'm not that person. I would never be that person.
Jake's
as long as
flipping
you play the
Monopoly
game right.
boards.
Jake's, that's exactly right. Jake's like, I don't even know that person, and I don't believe you for a second.
The Seahawks were reported in doing this with eye staring contests.
Yes.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
So, look, there are unique and quirky things that teams do just to try and find anything that they. Any little insight that they can about a person's personality, to me, you have to be looking for a very specific personality type if that's what you're going through. Because I just think it's ultimately, I think it's unbelievably silly to walk out of a room and say, "Oh, I just didn't like the way that guy played rock, paper, scissors. I don't think that he can play football for my team." I mean, like, are you kidding me? It's just such a bizarre way of approaching evaluation, but there's a method to the madness, I guess.
Well, as far as that goes, here's what Sirianni had to say about it.
Yeah, I think some of you guys are wondering, like, what game? We didn't go earth-shattering on these games, right? I played a couple of them at rock, paper, scissors, right? That was as easy as that. Rock, paper, scissors. Let's see how competitive you are. I'm competitive. I'm going to be talking trash to him. Did you talk trash back to me? Right? Jeopardy. There's different ways to do it. It looks a lot of different ways. But our coaches got so creative with this. Like, it was awesome, though, because it did anything you compete at. When you compete with somebody that's competitive, they're going to go at you no matter what game you're playing.
Now, Jake, you claim to not be someone that's overly competitive. Since you're a former athlete, I do not believe you. Can you see Curtis on the stream right now?
I can.
You're
going
to play Curtis with rock, paper, scissors right now. Best 2 out of 3.
Okay, but there's a delay.
There's
so
a delay.
I might know,
there's
so
a
Jake
delay,
might know what I'm throwing
that's
before
okay.
he
just,
throws.
Just we're gonna just try it. Let's are try you, it once and you, see if it works. Just do. Oh, don't try to follow each other. Just go. Rock.
Are we going? Are we going shoot or no?
Rock,
shoot?
Paper, scissors, shoot.
Okay.
Okay. Ready? Go.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. We both did scissors.
Okay, do it again.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Jake has paper.
Curtis, you're going too slow.
Curtis had paper. Do it one more time. Curtis, you got to go quicker. Come on.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Got him.
Ah. Yes.
Okay, okay.
Let's go.
Okay.
I'm done for the show, everybody.
Okay, that's again, once again, I feel like I proved my point here. All right. Now, next story here, Minnesota Timberwolves guard Anthony Edwards. I think all of us would agree very quickly becoming one of our favorite players and the best quote in the NBA. He has some advice, I think dating advice, for Alex Rodriguez. So as you guys know, there's this really like a viral story last week where Anthony Edwards is asked about new Timberwolves owner Alex Rodriguez and says basically, who?
I don't know this man.
I don't know that man. And everyone was giving him a hard time. And meanwhile, people were like, look, this guy was born in like 2001. It's okay if he doesn't know who A-Rod is. Other people felt like if you're in sports at all, if you're a sports fan, if you play sports, you got to know who some of the best are. So obviously, in an interview that Anthony Edwards just did with GQ, they followed up about it. And they were like, hey, do you know who he is now? And he said, yeah, look, I got made fun of by some friends, so I obviously, know who he is. So this is where the conversation goes. The interviewer says, you didn't watch any games or highlights to verify that with your own eyes, meaning like whether he was one of the best ever. And he says, no, I didn't watch any. I did know he dated J-Lo, though. And the interviewer corrects him and says, he does not, because obviously they've broken up. And Anthony Edwards says, what? Interviewer, he used to date J-Lo, but they just broke up. And then this is not radio friendly. Anthony Edwards goes, dang, but he doesn't say dang. Interviewer, you look like you're disappointed. Anthony, yeah, I am. Interviewer, any reason? Anthony, he's going to be my owner. I want him to be happy. Interviewer, you think he's going to be happier with J-Lo? Anthony, yeah. Something
yeah,
we
like,
all
for sure.
knew.
I have to disagree with Anthony here. I mean, I'm sure he's having a positive outlook for his new owner and Alex Rodriguez, but we all know that J-Lo was the thing that was propping up A-Rod at this point in time for his likability factor. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of ground to cover at this point. So, Anthony Edwards to me, it just seems to me like a kid who is going to be so much fun to watch. Not only because of his incredible play, but because of his personality and just how open he is. You know, even in an interview like this, most players, guys, I mean, you are so nervous and so robotic or you want to get a specific message out there to the people when you're dealing with GQ or SI, you know, like all these different entities out there, magazines and reporters, for him to just have a kickback, relaxed conversation with something like this, I think just shows the likability factor of Anthony Edwards.
All right, coming up next, we've got the best questions from this week's Seahawks mailbag, and it's not too late to get yours in, you guys. So if you have some, send them right now. Seahawks questions, 710-710. You can text them to that number. We'll throw those in with the rest of our answers. Your Seahawks questions answered in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Time for a Seahawks Q&A. These columns are normally published by your girl on 710sports.com. I got two great questions, one on offense and one on defense, but I got a couple more that I didn't include in the column. So in addition to including those and getting Jake's answer to them, as opposed to just mine, we'll give both of our answers. I've also got a couple questions that texters have sent in just right now. So we're going to include your guys's too, and you can keep those coming. Text them to 710-710. Any question you have about the Seahawks, we're going to continue that conversation about the Seahawks Q&A. So let's go ahead and start right here. This was from @DennertJesse on Twitter. And he or she asked, why is everyone so insistent that we need a wide receiver 3 other than Freddie Swain or John Ursua? Gerald Everett's a big step forward at tight end, and I'd assume we'll continue using the running backs in the pass game. I'll let you answer first, Jake.
Well, we haven't used our running backs all that effectively in the passing game, so there's one. But also, you don't want to settle, and especially when there's no need to settle. There's opportunity for you to spend money or add via free agency, but I also think that this is a really unique draft in terms of prospects that are out there at the receiver position that can play on the outside, that can play in the slot, that would bring a unique dynamic factor. And the truth is that Freddie Swain and John Ursua, especially Swain, who was on the active roster, who caught touchdowns this year, he's a guy that I've heard nothing but great things about from his time at Florida, from people that have been around him and coached him, and then also from the Seahawks themselves. They are very high on Freddie Swain, but he needs to go and earn that. He needs to go and prove himself that he is ready to take that next step forward and be that third receiver, where he's not just a guy who's contributing and making catches from time to time, but that he can be a legitimate factor on third down. He can be a winning one-on-one matchup for you at any given time out on the field. And I think that's the next step that Swain has to take. Mm-hmm. But I think that you always compete, you always add. And that is why, to me, if you're the person that was asking this question, we're insistent because you have an opportunity to go after your division. You have an opportunity to go after farther than what you've been so far in the playoffs, to go after a Super Bowl. And in order to do that, you need as much weaponry as possible. And just to settle for guys that are unproven, to me, is not smart ball. I think that Gerald Everett will be a good step forward at tight end, but ultimately you do need to add another competitive piece there to bring competition to Freddie Swain or to take that spot in general.
I think worth mentioning, too, that there are going to be some things that are trickier for a tight end not named Travis Kelce or George Kittle to do. Like, there is a type of speed and deep threat potential that they wanted from guys like Paul Richardson or David Moore, and they weren't ever the top receiver. They weren't ever the guy that was going to be 100% reliable 100% of the time, but they were a guy that could outrun most other dudes on the field, particularly Richardson when he was healthy. It is harder for a tight end to do that. He's packing on like 50 plus more pounds. Question number two. This is from Actixology 101. What's the likelihood of trading Quandre Diggs and letting Marquise Blair have the free safety position? I know it's a risk, but would save money and bring in good draft comp given his performance, age, and affordable contract. I'll answer this one first by just saying that I agree more with the latter half of that. It's a risk. Marquise Blair was impressing in camp. Jake, I know you watched a lot of him, and he didn't get a chance to show it to fans, really, because he suffered that ACL injury in week two. Maybe we all would have seen some of that, and you'd feel a lot better about moving on from a veteran. I don't feel good about moving on from a veteran right now at safety. It's where you have the most investment on your team. I understand completely why a fan would say you traded two first-round picks for Jamal Adams and you're about to pay him big money. You've got a $6.1 million cap hit for Quandre Diggs and a high second-rounder for Marquise Blair. That's so much invested in safety. But you're also going to have weaknesses at corner. And I feel better having Diggs still on the team, who led the team with 5 interceptions last year, 2 more than Shaquille Griffin.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think that when you look at Quandre Diggs, he is a player that I don't want to get rid of at all. You're building chemistry, and you have built your chemistry in the second half of this season with this current group, and you believe in this group. Quandre Diggs, I also don't believe, is going to get that big of a haul for you. You know, the Seahawks were able to trade him for a 5th-round pick. At most, he is maybe a 4th-round pick, and maybe a 7th, maybe at best. And so I don't think you're going to get the value that whoever, you know, sent in that question, I don't think you're going to get the same value in return that you're thinking he could get. And I believe him on this roster is more impactful than the quote unquote, you know, get that you could have for him in terms of a trade and in terms of draft capital. I just don't see that being the case. And so I think Quandre Diggs is too valuable to the back end of this defense, a guy that has been marked by everyone on the defensive side as a true leader, a guy that helps calm everything down, a guy that gets everybody set, and has been able to get his hands on the football and create turnovers that Pete Carroll desires greatly.
Time to hit the text line for a final question or two here. Thank you guys for participating in the Seahawks Q&A. How about this one? If you're, this is projecting, give me your surprise contributors on offense and defense. So let's just pick one, offense and defense. And it's early, but who do you hope?
Surprise contributor. I think Colby Parkinson is going to be my surprise contributor on offense. His size, his ability to run, we didn't really get to see him play last year because of his injury. He got into some action late in the season, but I think that he's a guy that could really, you know, take a positive step in the right direction in terms of his production and being a mismatch guy at the tight end position. Defensively, I will say LJ Collier. LJ Collier
would be the guy that
would be a surprise contributor and continue to keep improving on what he did a year ago. If he brought the same production as he did a year ago, I think that that would be very positive. But maybe LJ Collier isn't just blowing smoke when he said he expects a monster year for himself this year.
Mine is hopeful on defense. I'm really hoping that it's Daryl Taylor. I would love it if he came out and didn't just have to warm up to the NFL, but actually was pretty effective as a rookie. As a reminder, the team almost took him in the first round. On offense, I'm going to say Freddie Swain. I'd love to see that receiver group really get at it and be involved more. And as much as I want to see a diversified passing attack, I really want a wide receiver three. I want to go to speedy wide receiver three. Final question, very, very, very quick. What do we think about a competition between Witherspoon, Flowers, and Blair opposite at the opposite cornerback spot of DJ Reed?
I think that they – I still am firmly entrenched in the idea that they are going to draft a corner. They're going to draft a corner. They are going to add, young, talented depth. They already have a bunch of veteran players that they have signed. So I think – adding in the draft is going to be an obvious move for the Seahawks, either in the second, anywhere in the mid rounds. I'll just say that. Mid round pick, I would expect them to select a corner.
You know what? You guys have sent in so many good questions that I don't really want to end it here. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to bring in a third voice. We're going to bring in Brock Heward, one half of the Brock and Salk podcast, on with us. He knows everything there is to know about the NFL and the Seahawks. So let's keep this conversation going. Do not go anywhere. That's next.